This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And here we are. We are live here on Pet Life Radio and on Instagram Live. We're here live with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. Here for you, here for your pets, and take advantage of me. Oh, people take advantage of me. So any questions you have, now is the time to ask. And let's see. Hope everybody had a good week. I mean, when people say they love Los Angeles, and they always say, well, the weather, you can't be doing it. I mean, how gorgeous is it out there? Yesterday, I don't see a cloud in the sky. It is absolutely magnificent. And unlike my good friend Mark, sitting in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where it's probably humid and he's got fighting mosquitoes and all that. And here we are in a nice, dry, hot weather. I love it. Can dogs recognize other dogs in photos? Absolutely, they can. And not only that, what amazes me, and I see this in Frenchies, and again, I've had a number of Frenchies, and I have Dwight right now. They recognize anything that is not human as an enemy. And I've had dogs, my last one, literally would try to jump into a TV. You know, now the beauty is you got these huge TVs. They look so lifelike. Everything is so real. And they are literally making beelines. Now, what's even more amazing is he could be dead asleep in our bed. And then all of a sudden, something will come up, and how he sees it, hears it, I have no clue. And he will jump off bed in like a split second, run to the TV. And if he could, he would jump into the TV. And it's not just another dog. It's any animal, other animal. It is even a cartoon character, a picture, a drawing, anything that is not human. He goes bonkers. And I see this is very, very normal. So think about this. Think about recognition. And I'm sure you've seen on the internet, how many dogs are videotaped looking at their own reflection in a mirror and wanting to like jump into the mirror. They, of course, they may not recognize what they look like, but they certainly recognize a dog. And they, whether it's in a picture, they will, in fact, those of you who know my hospital, in an exam room 5, we had this gorgeous picture on a beach with a beautiful golden retriever lying, and dogs will actually start fixating on that picture. So they 100% recognize other animals. It is so amazing to me. Okay, New York Yankee, my 16-year-old Jack Russell Terrier usually has a good urine test. Last week, she got UTI, and her veterinarian said there was a drop of blood in the urine test. What happened with the blood showing up? Okay, so first of all, it could be a number of reasons. I always ask how the urine was collected. If the urine is collected the way most of us do, especially in anticipation of a URI, right? We don't want to do what's called a free catch. We want to do what's called cystocentesis. Why? Because when you do a free catch urine in an animal, their urethra, which is the tube that leads from the bladder to the outside, is, let's face it, not the cleanest thing in the world. And as in women, it actually is worse in female dogs because of the proximity just anatomically to the anal area. So a lot of times, many urinary tract infections are what we call ascending urinary tract infections. That means they started on the outside and went in. Now, picture this, the old-fashioned way. And when I graduated veterinary school a long time ago, we used to collect urine either by free catch, hard to do because you have to take the dog out, you got to walk, or we used to pass a catheter. So think about this. You have a fairly unclean or not so clean outside. And here you are like a pool cue. You're taking that catheter and you're shoving it up the urethra through the penis or through the vaginal canal. And now you're going to take a urine sample. It comes back with bacteria. You're going to scratch your head saying, where did that bacteria come from? Did we introduce it by the way we collected it? Or was it truly really there? So in people, we're a lot cleaner. And so it's less of an issue. And therefore, when we leave a urine sample for our doctor, it's usually what we call a free catch. So in dogs and cats, we do what's called cystocentesis. We want to eliminate that possibility of having either contaminated the bladder that wasn't dirty in the first place, there was no infection, we introduced the bugs, or we want a real answer. So if we see some bacteria, we're going to say, was that bacteria really there or did we put it in there? So by cystocentesis, we are sticking a needle, usually using either really good palpation or an ultrasound probe, identifying the bladder, taking a syringe and needle, poking it right through the skin directly into the bladder and collecting our sample. So now we know that our sample is directly from the bladder. So if there are white cells or bacteria there, we know it's real. So it's much more accurate. However, back to the original question, when we see a little blood, sometimes we'll get, and we can get, and it's usually recognizable, and we'll put a note in the chart, traumatic tap. So sometimes in hitting the bladder wall, you can't see the vessels. You might hit a vessel, and at the very beginning of your draw, you might get a little bit of blood. You see it, and then it dilutes. As you draw blood, more and more blood gets more diluted. You know that's a traumatic tap. Now, the difference between that and having truly bleeding into the bladder is as you're drawing back your urine sample into the syringe, and if it is a little reddish, but that same reddish stays throughout the entire draw, you know that's real. Then that means it's bleeding from the bladder itself, and there was blood in the urine already. So it's subtle. A subtle change. I always test my technicians who are helping me. Are we worried about this, or is it just a traumatic tap? So that's why it's important to know where the blood is coming from. If it was just the very beginning of the draw, not to worry, a traumatic tap. If it is throughout the entire draw, then we have to see. And also depends on how much blood is there. If it's high, it'll tell you how many red cells for high power field. And it'll also tell you on the analysis, if there's RBCs, red cells will be a +1, +2, +3, et cetera. If it's just a traumatic tap, it's usually a +1. If you get a lot of blood through the draw, then it's most likely something that's real. So anyway, there you have it. If that helps you, great. I never had a dog that had blood in his urine test. I said, it may be nothing. It all depends on how the urine was collected. All right, Jennifer Ashley. When a dog is anxious, how do you recommend you help them calm? So great question, Jennifer, considering we are approaching 4th of July. And we know a lot of dogs have a lot of anxiety when it comes to fireworks, 4th of July, et cetera. So it really depends on the degree and your dog. I always try something more natural first. Any kind of calming formula. I have my calming formula for performance by Dr. Jeff. It's called Chill, but there are other products like it. We have valerian, passion flower, chamomile, melatonin. So all things that are known to have L-tryptophan, a nice calming effect on dogs. I try that first. Now, the 4th of July coming up, you might want to test it first. Then if that doesn't work, then you have good old-fashioned, believe it or not, Benadryl. The good old-fashioned antihistamines, chlorpheniramine and Benadryl are the sleepy kind. Don't do Zyrtec. Don't use Claritin. They're great if you want to do for yourself an antihistamine, but they're not going to help a dog because histamine doesn't play a major role in their allergy. Therefore, as an anti-allergy, not so good. However, if you want to do a little calm down, then it works great. So think about that. Now, other things, Cilio. Cilio, available from your veterinarian, is dexmedetomidine. It is a paste that you give them. Great for that quick fix, say 4th of July, construction next door, a thunderstorm, etc. And then you have the stronger things that you're going to do more long-term, like trazodone, even gabapentin has a nice sedative effect. Or really, if you have a super anxious dog all the time, then you're thinking of some of the tricyclic antidepressants. Talk to your veterinarian. One of my favorite is like the SSRI or the tricyclics. For example, Prozac. We use a lot of Prozac in dogs. So those are things you can think about. But personally, I try to go with the more natural stuff first. Okay, what is your opinion of the Temeril P? Used occasionally and costly for allergy in the dog. For some reason, Cytopoint doesn't work on her. That is interesting to me that Cytopoint doesn't work. I would try Apoquil first. Temeril P is an antihistamine, and the P stands for a little bit of prednisone. I think it's 2 milligrams of pred. So, again, since antihistamine is really not that effective in dogs for allergy, I've never been a big fan of Temeril P. If I'm going to use P, prednisone, I'm going to go straight to prednisone. And the amount of prednisone is very small amounts, 2 milligrams. So, look, if you're using it and it works, great. If it works and you want to try something that's simpler and probably less expensive, go straight to the straight prednisone. Because it's really the P that's helping you, not so much the Temeril. And I'm surprised the Cytopoint doesn't work. I would try Apoquil. And Apoquil is, they work a little bit differently. And I don't want to get into the science now. It's very complicated. But if I get a case where Cytopoint doesn't work, that means basically that interleukin 31 is not the only cellular mediator that's causing the allergy. Probably the main one, but not the only one. And Cytopoint only works against interleukin 31. Apoquil, however, which is a Janus kinase 1 and a Janus kinase 3, short JAK1, JAK3 blocker, that also blocks some of the other inflammatory mediators. So it will work even for other mediators, not just interleukin 31. So sometimes I use a combination of both in really refractory cases. Other times, you might try the cytopoint. The cytopoint might work just fine. But again, prednisone, I've had cases where, and I love these, that I've gone back to the old fashioned, the cyclosporins, Atopica. I've gone back to steroid, and they seem to work. As long as they're used judiciously, as long as you respect the drug, then they do fine. So anyway, great question. Thank you very much. And let me know. I would try the Apoquil, or maybe in combination with, I think would be a good idea. Do you have my stress spray? No, the stress spray is it's a chew. It's really, really good. Now, for sprays, you might try the Adaptil or Feel-Away. Feel-Away for cats, Adaptil for dogs. It's a pheromone spray. And that also seems to bring them down. And there's also a natural product called Zilkine. Zilkine works. Again, there is no one product that's going to work for every animal. You just got to get that straight. There's no one product that's going to work for everybody. So you're looking for another. And Rescue Remedy, another really good one. Lavender, if it works. These are things you want to try, because all of these have benefit. And sometimes you put it in combination. Sometimes one won't work alone. So 80-pound German Shepherd, how much gabapentin can I give her? Well, for sure, 300 milligrams. You might even be able to give more. For 80 pounds, 40 kilos, you might even be able to go up to like 600 milligrams. I would try 300 three times a day to start. If that doesn't work, maybe add a couple of hundreds. There is a 500 on the human side, so you can get that. That probably might be the answer, the 500 human version. In veterinary, we're usually 100 and 300, but it's a human drug, so you can get it, not a problem. Famotidine dose for 14-pound dog. So I just use, that's Pepcid, by the way. I would use a quarter to a half of an over-the-counter OTC, comes Pepcid AC, comes 10 milligram, and that's what I would use. I would start there. And before we go on break, I want to give you a philosophical something to think about. And I'd love your opinions. I don't want to go into too much detail, but real quick, this is something I'm faced with. I do a lot of expert witnessing. I work with a couple of attorneys that for some ridiculous reason value my opinion. I can't figure it out. Anyway, so I have a case and it involves two specialists, a surgeon and an emergency medicine critical care, one of whom I don't know personally, but I know the name, very respectful, good reputation. And it's a case where reviewing all the depositions and going through hundreds of pages, there are a lot of mishaps, certainly not malicious, no, nothing evil. But I guess the bottom question is, when you realize that something is wrong, and I don't mean a problem in a case, I'm talking morally and ethically wrong, and you're working at a company, with a company, for a boss, whatever, and you note something that is morally and ethically, not something that you might be able to do better, not you'd want to go to them, make a suggestion. What they're doing isn't wrong. There may be something you've learned from another workplace that this might work better. Oh, no, I'm not talking about that. Giving a suggestion, something positive. I'm talking about you see morally, ethically wrong. And what do you do? You become a whistleblower? How do you handle it? What do you do? Because now that's kind of what I'm faced with. And I want to know, is the right thing to do? I told the attorney, I'm not going to testify in court against these guys. No way. But what I wouldn't mind doing is writing an opinion letter. Just an opinion, my opinion as an outsider, reviewing hundreds of pages of case and just seeing it. First, when she first approached me and I heard who it was, I said, no, I'm not going to get involved in that. But then I'm reading the, as I said, depositions. And I'm going, how did they not see this? Why did they do that? Even though they knew this, it was like, I'm just a regular guy. I'm a GP. And I noticed this. How much more so should a specialist have noted these things and acted upon them? And I was a little bit shocked. So anyway, am I wrong to even just write a letter, just my opinion letter, citing some of these things and just saying, look, in a way, as a GP, as a general practitioner, like when you're a specialist, you see way more and you see way more things that don't work out right. And you sort of develop maybe a cavalier attitude, a laissez-faire. It doesn't bother you because you've been through this hundreds of times. A GP who does not been through this hundreds of times might be a little bit more serious and take this a little more seriously and say, wow, this is going on. Maybe we should stop here and not continue. And let's see how we do, or let's go to plan B before we continue plan A. And anyway, what do you think? Am I wrong to write, as asked by my attorney that I work with, to just write, because she knows I'm not going to go to court. I don't think it's ever going to get to court. Just to write an opinion letter about how I feel about the case, how it was handled, give the specifics of things that bothered me. So while we go to break, I want you to ponder those and come back and let me know your opinion. I'd appreciate it. And don't go away. We'll be back after these short messages from our sponsors here at Pet Life Radio. Take it away, Mark.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back onto the show. We're back live here. We just got a question. A dose of Serenia, which is an anti-vomiting med for 14-pound dog. So Serenia is usually dosed at one full cc for every 22 pounds. So 14, roughly two-thirds of a cc, point C. I would give 0.7 cc's of the dose for a 14-pound dog. Now, the other thing that, you know, we say when it comes to the oral Serenia, you have to know that there are two different doses. There's a dose for just vomiting and a dose for motion sickness. So again, it all depends on why you're giving it. And again, speak to your veterinarian, and the doses are posted on the box or in the inserts for whether it's for just vomiting, anti-vomiting, or anti-motion sickness. And I think the motion sickness is a much higher dose. So anyway, I'm not sure because I don't use it much, but I know there's a difference in dose. Hardwick Mom, I don't, you'll act on behalf of the patient's welfare. And that was my thing. It's about the patient's welfare here. And it bothered me. One of the things I have to tell you, and I've been down this path as an expert witness, is that we carry insurance. Many things that happen, you know, it's the expression, I don't want to say it on camera, but poop happens. You know what I'm trying to say. And a lot of times it's beyond our control. And a lot of times we can make a really good decision based on prior experience. But in this particular case, it didn't come out right. And that's going to happen. So that's why we have insurance. And let me tell you something about veterinary pet insurance. We're talking, and I'm not talking about pet insurance for you, the consumer, you know, to help. So I'm talking about veterinarians have liability insurance that we should carry. I think the American Vet Med Association requires it. And it's, when you think about medical doctors, for example, an OBGYN, where the premiums are hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, we're talking, I think for $1 million coverage, at least in LA, it's about $300 a year. We're not talking about major dollars. And when it comes to lawsuits, you really can't, it's really hard to prove a true malicious negligence. In other words, just negligence and oversight. In California, for example, a dog is property. A dog is no different than your washing machine, your television set, your refrigerator. If there's a mistake, something happens during the repair, or it's not repaired properly, and it blows out the whole TV, all you have to replace is the TV. You can't claim emotional distress because that was my favorite TV ever, and I can't have it anymore. No, that's not going to work. You have to prove what we call malicious negligence, that you had it out for this client or this patient, and you did what you did maliciously. That's a tough one to prove. So we're not talking about major boku bucks. We're talking about maybe refunding the money for the surgery that went awry, or for the diagnostics that you missed when you looked at the MRI or the CT or somebody made a mistake. That's going to happen in medicine. Medicine is not exact. So every animal is different. And it, you know, it's happened to me, and any veterinarian who says they've never had a problem, I think is full of it, because that's like veterinarians saying to me that they've never been bit or scratched. Well, in my opinion, if you're a veterinarian, have never been bitten or scratched, I wouldn't trust you as far as I could throw you, because that means you never really got close to that patient, whether it was a cat, a dog, hugging, really checking the mouth. You need to get close up. You need to use your hands. Get bitten. It's happened. You know, fortunately for me, not tons of times in my 40 years, but it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. Yes, I've had stitches. Yes, I've been bitten in the face because I stick my face in their face. Am I stupid? Of course I am. But still, I think the benefits far outweigh the few times that I've got nailed. So it is very important, I think, when a case like this, you know, what you do is you do the right thing. It was a mistake. I don't think it was purposely done, but it is what it is. Okay. I think we all need to step up our pace when it comes to our animals and children. I think it is the right thing to do. Definitely write the letter. I kind of agree. That's what I'm leaning to. It's hard as a practitioner for many years. It's hard to bother me because it's hard to read something that something is done and not admit, you know what? Yeah, that it does happen. It happened to me once or twice. But when things are totally overlooked, the clues were there. The signs were there and they proceeded anyway. And of course, obviously the ending was not good. It just bothers me because what did you, did they keep going for the money? I just don't know. But certainly, maybe like I said, it's that laissez-faire, cavalier attitude because they've probably faced that hundreds of times in their careers as specialists. They see, of course, they see much more challenging cases than I see. And look, right now in this point in the anesthesia, I'm seeing that, but you know, they pull through. They pull through. They pull through all the time. Ah, but this time they didn't. So it's one of those things where I'm a little bit concerned. Heat wave in New York, precautions. Ah, thank you so much. It's a great question. So here what you should do. First of all, make sure if you have to keep them outside, they have to have shade and plenty of access to water. If you can get like an outdoor fan, that would help as well. Just obviously watch out for the cords. Make sure they're hidden or out of the pet's reach. If you can put them inside into air conditioning, that obviously would be the thing to do and only take them out, you know, to take care of business when they have to be going out. But the water is important. Now, if you have a dog, a young dog that likes to play with their water bowl and you fill it and they think it's a toy and they tip it over and now they have no water, a couple of solutions. Number one is the Lixit. Lixit is a little device. I've seen this. It's got to be 30 years ago. I love it. It's a device that you hook it up to the spigot and it has a little bar that comes down that when it's in the center position, it's off. But as soon as they lick this thing, that's why I call it Lixit, the water comes out. So there's no way they can tip it over. And there's no way it runs out of water. So that is a great thing. Another trick I heard years ago, they have a grassy area. Love this one because it's so easy and so practical. All right. You take a bundt pan. All right. It's got the hole in the center. And what you do is you take a wooden dowel, like an inch wooden dowel, right up through the hole and then bang it into the grass. So now your bundt pan, which is your water bowl, is anchored. So they can't tip it over. They can play with it, but they can't knock it over because it's anchored by the dowel, the wooden dowel, and use that, fill it with ice and water. Now, sometimes I'll start the day with a whole thing of ice and put water in it. That way, the water stays cool. And secondly, as the ice melts, they're continually getting more water. So those are some suggestions, but shade from the heat is critical and full access to water. Those are important. I think so too. And I hate to be that whistleblower, and I'm not really knocking them because I think some of the mistakes were normal. But I think that they didn't pay attention to them. I think because they were so seasoned and had seen this so many times, sometimes in my case, I forget. I've never been in enough cases to develop that comfort level. So I'm going to act and react accordingly. But when you've seen dozens and dozens, you've been there, done that, then I think that they lost sight of that. That's what bothered me. Zofran safe for dogs. Yes, it is. Ondansetron comes in oral medication, injectable medication. It's a great anti-emetic. Meaning it's a great anti-vomiting medication. So if the dog is vomiting, then yes, I like that one a lot. So talk to your veterinarian. I see a lot of new faces here. I'm so thrilled. Well, I don't see a lot of faces. I see a lot of new names here. I wish I could see faces. So thank you all for your opinion. I was sort of debating whether I should or shouldn't. Again, I'm not, and I make it very clear that these are very respectful people. And I think, as I said, it's an issue of just get a little too comfortable sometimes. And a lot of times, again, to do what we do, we have to leave a lot up to our technicians. And our technicians have roles to play. And in this case, also, there were some mishaps. Now, again, I've been there, done that with my technicians, but I'm usually there. And in this case, they have so much going on because it's a specialty hospital and there are different surgeries going on in different suites, different rooms, that the surgeon wasn't there all the time during the prep. And anyway, they were just, I don't want to get into too many details, but I think there were enough errors that actually, when I was reading these depositions, changed my mind. My first talk was, I wouldn't do that. These guys are great guys. I know them. No, at least one of them. And I was a bit surprised. I was surprised at the non-action. That's what surprised me. Not the action, not what they did. It's what they didn't do, what they didn't respond to, given certain clues that they should have. And it's always, you know, I always say, in facing, I'm doing something right now with one of my good friends, whose dog has been having some issues, and we were trying to figure it out. I actually sent him to an emergency specialty clinic. They did an endoscopy. I had an ultrasound done by a specialist that I adore, and they're all saying the same thing. There's nothing in this intestinal tract that should be causing these signs. You do not need to worry about blockage. Therefore, you do not need to worry about doing surgery. And yet, the dog is still ADR, ain't doing right, major diarrhea, And the ultrasonographer, my friend Sam, actually told me that there was going to be a lot of diarrhea coming up. He was able to pick that up on ultrasound. And as I was talking to my friend, we said, you know, at what point do you worry? And I said, look, he asked if she can go back in and get more tests done. And I said, here's the thing. We're still puzzled by what's going on. You have to ask yourself a question. What are the ramifications of doing something, being a little bit more proactive, and then finding out you didn't need to? That's exactly the case here. They did the extra ultrasound. They did the test, x-ray, still nothing. Versus not doing it, and then after the fact, finding out you needed to. And now you have dismal complications and results. So the only difference between the two, and by the way, we're talking about non-invasive stuff here. So there was no surgery. Now, it's not like you're cutting a dog open and then finding out you couldn't find the foreign body. I've done that before, but it really helped because we now knew that we didn't have to worry about a blockage. Whereas if I continue to ignore the massive signs of a blockage, I mean, the intestines were full of gas, and that usually indicates a blockage from the stomach all the way through. Something was hole plugging somewhere, and there was a blockage, and I didn't act. Then we'll have a dead animal. But this way, so yeah, it was a little surgery. It was quick because I was able to run the loop of bowel. Found out there was nothing and at least put all our minds at ease. So that's an important question to ask. And in this case, they didn't act on it. And unfortunately, it was a very bad end result. So anyway, thank you for joining me here on Pet Life Radio and on Instagram Live. And if you have any questions during the week, or if you have things that would be a good topic of discussion, something you've gone through with your pet, whether it's medical, whether it's surgical, whether it's behavioral, love to share my insights. I'm not going to have all your answers, but hopefully some. But if nothing else, when I look at my role as I want to get you thinking in the right direction. I want to pick out the important things to now make a decision that's an informed decision, because oftentimes you don't get that. And you're left with not having enough information and you have to make a decision, but you don't know enough. And from thorough exam, I can rule out a lot of things just from the history. And when I see something doesn't make sense based on something I got in history, then I can eliminate two or three tests that you were told to do by your doctor. And then you can narrow down 10 tests down to 2 tests to really give you what you need to know. So anyway, there you have it. Thanks for joining me. Those of you here in Southern California, at least here in LA, enjoy a magnificent day. It is absolutely gorgeous. Thanks for joining me. Love to hear from you during the week. It doesn't just have to be on Sunday. And of course, those of you that are my patients, if you have any questions, you know how to get them. Have a great week. Have a great day. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.